A packed edition of the Radio Today program coming up. We've got memories of Dale Winton, the new Radio Academy chair Yvonne Thompson, plus Trevor Dan looks at new developments and opportunities in radio and audio production in a special discussion recorded this week at the Nations and Regions Conference in Salford. James Cridland asks, will podcasts eat radio? And in David Lloyd's Radio Moment, some royals host the Radio 1 chart show, The King goes on air for the first time, Johnny Walker goes legal, and Chris Evans takes over Radio 1 Breakfast.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
First though, Radio Today's founder and editor Roy Martin is here to talk through what's been going on in radio this week. Hello, Mr. Roy.
Hi, Stu. I notice you didn't call me executive president this week or last week.
Do we not like that? You weren't on last week, that's why.
Well, I meant the week before.
Yeah. But there we are. So we're not playing Stu versus Roy this week, but it will, I promise, return next week. We've got Larry and Paul on the podcast with us next week to have some fun.
Oh, no, not those two.
No. How's that happened?
They're your next door neighbours, aren't they?
Yeah, they're getting a bit big for their station, I think, these days. Big for their boots. Anyway, they'll be on the podcast next week. The big story of the week, most read on Radio Today this week, was the sad news of the death of Dale Winton, just 62 years old. Now, Roy, you're a similar vintage to me. You see, when I first experienced Dale Winton, it was Supermarket Sweep, and I had no idea that he'd been on Radio Trent and Beacon and all the radio stuff that he'd done. Did you know he was a radio person when we saw him on the telly in the 90s?
I did not, and I didn't know the major background of these people as ever until something sadly happens. Then when you first of all look at Wikipedia and see what that's saying, and then you do some proper research and find out the background. And it was only you that filled in all the gaps for me to tell me he was a radio person through and through. And there was a clip from Joel Ross that you retweeted, I think, to say that he wanted to go up to a radio station in Scarborough just for an anorak, yeah, which I thought was fantastic.
But yeah, I mean, probably people my age, I'm in my late 30s, remember him from Supermarket Sweep and then obviously doing the lottery. And then he started on Radio 2 in 2000, so I'd have been about 19, 20. And I was probably one of those people at the time who said, how is some TV star just getting a job on Radio 2? That's not fair. You know how people do these days, all these TV subs. And we forget that actually a lot of people like Dale and like Chris Evans and Dermot O'Leary all started out in local radio. So they had the great grounding for it. So someone who actually worked with Dale at Radio Trent back in the 80s was our own David Lloyd. And he's actually been sharing some of his memories this week with Trevor Dan.
Sad day then, David Lloyd. But actually, he would have enjoyed hearing all the tributes that have been paid.
He would have absolutely loved it. Dale was always going to be a star. Radio was part of the journey. It was a platform which exposed him to his audience, and that was a pretty good place to start. But I remember one distinctly moment in the office, and we sat down just after his programme, and he sat there and he swiveled around. He was a big guy, ample figure, larger than life, held the room, and he swiveled round and he held out his hand and he counted out his ambitions on his fingers, and he said the first one was, I want to host a tacky game show. And those were his exact words, because we all laughed and said, well, why a tacky game show? Because he realised that a game show would be good for his abilities, but he knew it had to be a bit camp, it didn't have to be too serious. He knew the vehicle he wanted for television. And so, you know, to express that long before Supermarket Sweep ever existed and he was cast for it was amazing. And he also mentioned the people. This sounds odd now. He mentioned the people he wanted to be friends with. He said, I want to be friends with Cilla, Barbara Windsor. And he went through this list of luminaries, all of whom he went on to have very close, natural relationships with. His vision was inspired.
A lot of that generation of DJs were rather disappointing when you met them because they weren't the same person as they were on air. But I've always felt that Dale was the same whether there was a microphone there or not.
Dale's performance started when he got up in the morning. I mean, and the show started when he arrived. You know, he always arrived fairly late. I'm sure there are many others who did. So during the 9 o'clock news for his morning show, this large car, because he loved his cars, would roll up outside Castlegate, and he would bounce out, often wearing the most, you know, one piece. I remember the One Piece Army outfit, which I, you know, some wonderful pink slacks, all sorts of things. And he would arrive, but you knew Dale had arrived. So he walked through the reception, morning, you know, and straight, literally straight through reception, down the stairs. And as the weather was being read, he went on and the energy began. So Dale was the same on air as off air. And later in the office, you know, the office banter was amazing. He used to really enjoy his conversation with Peter Tate, alas, also no longer with us. But it wasn't a private chat between them. They were doing this before. This was Fringe Fit Theatre in the presentation office at Radio Trent. And Peter was pretty good as well. So Peter, I remember one memorable occasion, Peter gave a good line, a good out. Dale wasn't having that. So Dale waved his hand in the air, flicked his fingers and said, "Oh, Peter, if only you were that funny on the air." And it was just, but you know, but he delivered it better than I have just done. He was who he is. And he was always very giving to listeners and people who wanted time with him. He treated them as special as he treated Cilla and Barbara Windsor, and they love that. He knew how to get round people. He came to our wedding, and of course a lot of people aren't in radio, and they saw, "Oh, it's Dale Winton over there," so they went and talked to him, and he gave them time. And then they were ringing their mothers saying, "Dale Winton's over here." He grabbed the phone talking to their mothers. You know, he always saw a stage.
Now, as you say, you knew him well personally. He was a friend of yours. Some of the obits are saying, I mean, even Steve Allen this morning on LBC are talking about he's been in a bit of a dark place recently. Do you think he felt that his career was going downhill?
It's almost the tears of a clown, in a sense, isn't it? I mean, Dale had a tragic start to his life with his mother dying when he was 21, and he found her, and she was, you know, an accomplished actress, and she was very depressed, very down, and took her own life. And he said, you know, he didn't feel rejected by that, but not a day goes by when he thinks, could I have done something? So that's your start with your life, and that was there at the background. And I think that fired him on to success. It was the thing that kept him going. Through his career, it's easy to say it was radio than TV. It wasn't. He had no money. He was on his uppers. He had a really tough spell, but he kept that vision. And then, you know, he had a really good spell on television. And in recent years, I haven't seen much of him in very recent years, but he opened up, of course, on Loose Women about his own depression. And my mother had a phrase where it was, people will never make old bones. And I don't think Dale Winton was ever going to be not a TV face. He would have wanted to go when people remembered him sort of how he is.
That's David Lloyd talking to Trevor Dann, both of whom will be back later in this episode of the podcast. Roy Martin's still with us, and you are back on the radio yourself this week, Roy.
I know, right? This is
how has that happened?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't exactly fill in a CV or anything. No, I'm basically, as we do in the industry sometimes, helping a friend. Although they've made it look like I've signed a 12-month contract for a very lucrative deal hosting the fabulous Late Roy Martin Show. Thanks to Martin Kellner for that title. Nicely stolen. But no, weeknights, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, get Fridays off.
Obviously.
On Andover Sound. It's 95.9 FM in the aforementioned town, which is amazing.
And this is David Harbour's new community radio station, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got a lot of history in Andover. So when the opportunity to apply and set up a community radio station came around, he applied and won because it was a great application with a little bit of help from somebody not too far away from here. And he decided to set up the radio station. There's been an article from Steve Martin on it about how it's digital first. So they set up loads of events and things like that before they even went on air. Which is almost unheard of these days. And the radio station launched on Sunday at 10 a.m. And my first show was on Monday night.
Excellent. The listeners will be flooding in their droves in Andover to hear that, no doubt. And you're obviously voice tracking it, but most of the station is as well, or all the station is that right?
Yeah, I think it's quite proud of the fact that the entire station is pretty much pre-recorded. I mean, during the day, they will be around, the presenters are around, and like on Monday with the birth, the royal birth, you know, the next link after the announcement was reflecting what had happened. So it is as live, but it's all pre-recorded. Breakfast show's pre-recorded, but all the things that matter, the weather, the travel, the news, it's all just squirted in by people working on those kind of things rather than having a DJ back announcing all the pop tunes. So, yeah, my show's pre-recorded as well. And I think they're quite proud of the fact that it's all very clever, using very, very clever use of technology.
Well, I've not been doing any pre-recording this week. It's all been live because I've been on 5 Live. I was supposed to be working 2 nights this week. It's ended up being 4 night shifts. So
just think of the money.
I know, a bit bleary-eyed from that. But what it does mean, working all these nights, as I have been doing this week, is I've spent about 9 hours in the car because I live about an hour from Salford. So a bit of listening on the way and on the way back. So I've got to hear all sorts of things. I was listening to Simon Clark one morning, who's a friend of the show, just started on Radio Solent, early breakfast. He sounded very good.
He'll be pleased to hear that.
Yes, I was texting him when I got home. he was sounding really good, I thought. Nice and fresh for BBC Radio Solent first thing in the morning. I also heard on Monday Loco's debut on Radio Manchester with Chelsea. Chelsea Norris on BBC Radio Manchester Breakfast. I thought that sounded really good, actually. I've not really heard much of Chelsea since she started, so I was listening to a bit of that. It's nice you can just dip in and out, and it's being awake and not having the kids in the background early in the morning. You can actually properly listen to some breakfast radio. And a couple of podcasts I want to mention this week that I've heard as well. We talked about the Naked podcast a couple of weeks ago, which is the girls from Radio Sheffield, and the episode with Stephanie Hurst is worth a listen. There's lots of radio geeky stuff in there, and some really honest discussion from her about her gender transitioning, so that's worth a listen. And final recommend from me this week, a new podcast from Nick Clegg, ex of LBC, apparently was the Deputy Prime Minister or something as well. He's started a new podcast called Anger Management with Nick Clegg and his first guest, LBC's Nigel Farage. And those two just talk about politics and kind of frustration and anger and that kind of stuff for about 45 minutes. And it's definitely worth a listen. It's really good. You've been listening to anything good this week, Mr. Roy?
Politicians and podcasts, hey, it's a growing thing. I've not been listening to In Radio this week.
Oh, why not?
Because it's gone. Oh. It's closed down.
This was Radio Today's own radio station that launched a couple of years ago.
That's right. It was an experiment. It always has been. We've never shied away from saying that. And I think it sounded amazing. I really liked it. I listened. I think I was the biggest listener. Apart from Roger, who always listened.
Hello, Roger.
But I think, yeah, I think it was great. And I think it was full of radio stuff and anarchy news, and it was just something good to listen to if you were interested in radio. Not necessarily a radio professional, but if you're interested in, you know, behind the scenes in radio, then that's what it was all about. But nobody was listening. That's the problem. And it was taking up a lot of resource, a lot of electricity, a lot of time and money. And for the three people that listened regularly, I'm sad to say it is no more. It was good whilst it was here, but
a lot to learn for online vanity project radio stations. I think some of them are really good, and some of them do pull in some audience. But it kind of makes you think, if you're only broadcasting to 20 or 30 people, even as a maximum, is there any point?
Yeah, exactly. And to put it into context, Jingle Mad Radio, which is the other vanity project, that gets more listeners than In Radio. Okay. So playing jingles on a loop has probably that. 5 times more listeners. So that one's still going. Yeah. So yeah. Any feedback? Because we'd still like to continue the In Radio brand somehow. Because broadcasting live from, you know, your radio days and radio events like that is a big thing. We'd like to continue doing that. So if we can continue in a different way, then do let us know any feedback.
I'm talking to big radio events. Under 3 weeks to go now till Radio Audio Week. This is the Radio Centre Tuning In Conference. It's the Radio Festival. It's also the British Podcast Awards and a few other things going on as well. That's all happening from the week starting the 14th of May. And Radio Today Live will be there, as always, with all the coverage. Nice to catch up, Mr. Roy, and we will be back with Larry and Paul next week.
Thank you very much, Stu. You're doing a fantastic job, and long may you continue.
Excellent. Still to come. That's a pay rise for me. Still to come, we're on stage in Salford for Radio Tomorrow. I know, at the Nations and Regions Conference. Next, though, Trevor talking to the newly appointed chair of the Radio Academy.
Phone calls, social media, SMS, email, codec control and visualization through the same interface. Phone box from Broadcast Bionics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Yvonne Thompson, welcome to the Radio Academy, to the radio business. How's it going so far?
Very interesting, very energetic. I am really kind of getting up to speed very quickly, or I'm trying to get up to speed very quickly.
Now, did you apply for this post, or did somebody come and try and hook you in?
Well, it was a bit of both, actually, because I was approached for something else within the music industry, which I didn't get. And then I was recommended, I was told about this, and I approached them. And then they came back to me and said, would you like to come in for an interview? And I had very long interviews with Chris and with Roger and a couple of other people. And then they went off and made a decision, I think.
Now, it's a really interesting appointment because you're not one of the kind of great and the good from the board tables of the BBC or Global, which has traditionally been where the chair has come from. Mm-hmm. I guess that gives you an impartiality or at least a different perspective. In what way do you think that's going to help?
Well, let's get the great and the good bit back. I am a bit of a great and good, but not BBC or Global. Absolutely right.
You do have a CBE, don't you?
I do.
Qualifies as great and good.
Okay, that's good. That's good to know. So my background, I hope, will bring a fresh approach, will bring a fresh view. I don't really want to say tainted in any way, but having not been in the radio industry for quite some time, I have been associated. You know, my background is with Choice FM. I was one of the founding directors of Choice FM, so I helped to grow that for about 15 years, and then we sold it on to Global. So since we've sold it, I haven't been as in touch or in the inner circles of radio. But I mean, it'll always be in my blood. So when, you know, I heard about this possibility, I did get quite excited. So it's good that I've still got that energy and that passion for radio. So I'm going to bring lots of that as well.
You do a lot of public work. Yes. You know, you run boards and you've chaired events. Mm-hmm. And you work particularly in the women in business sector. Now, my God, women need a bit of help in the radio business. So are you thinking that you can do some good work in that area?
Well, I'm very big on championing diversity as a whole. So the whole BAME situation as far as radio is concerned, the whole women's situation as far as radio is concerned, during my time and as long as they will have me, I guess as long as I keep doing a good job, they'll have me. And as long as I've got the energy, I will certainly, that's something I would like to think that I've made a difference. You know, all those sayings, shifted the dial, pressed for progress, all of that stuff. Those are the kind of things that I really want to leave as one of my legacies of being at the Radio Academy.
Because it's nearly two decades now since Greg Dyke said that the BBC was hideously white. And there's still a big issue, isn't there, with portrayal and BAME diversity?
Yeah. Well, I think if we're talking about radio in general, I think it's come a long way, but it's still got a long way to go. It's very much the same with women. You know, that's right across the board. I don't think it's just the BBC. I think in the radio industry in general, you know, not even behind the scenes, I think there's a good number. There's still a good opportunity to increase the diversity right across the board, whether it's the BBC or independent.
There's been some very high profile cases about the gender pay gap, not just at the BBC, but also in commercial radio. Yeah. Is that something that you think now a light has been shone on it can be put right?
As you know, I do a lot with corporates, and it's exactly the same right across the board, whether it's radio, television, corporates. I think the light has been shone and people are waking up to things, but it's like everything else. We've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go. So there's a bit of progress, but I think there's, you know.
One of the issues that you'll come up against, I'm sure, I speak from my own experience at the Radio Academy, is getting women and particularly getting BAME women to be on panels. Mm-hmm. So that the panels at conferences actually look like the industry ought to be. Mm-hmm. How do we address that? This is not just a Radio Academy issue. It's a media business issue, I think.
It's an issue right across the UK business world. So, you know, don't bash radio or television. It's everywhere. And for me, one of the things that I do when I feel that there's not enough diversity, I call it out. Because if you don't call it out, you are, in essence, giving the situation oxygen to go on. You're giving it approval. If you don't say it when you see it, as they say on the underground, yes, say it when you see it and
see
sort it.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to see it, say it, and get it sorted.
Good. I'll play that back to you in a couple of years' time, and then we'll see if that's how success looks.
Yeah.
As a radio listener, then, Yvonne, what do you have on? What kind of programmes are you switching on?
Oh, gosh. Well, of course, when Choice FM first started, it was always Choice FM because it was such a breath of fresh air listening to music that, I mean, I remember the days when the only time you could hear black music on radio was Greg Edwards at 11 o'clock on a Sunday night on Capital Radio. That was the only time you could hear any black music. And then Tony Blackburn came along and then there was a bit of BBC. But other than that, you know, Choice was a breath of fresh air. I still go to places, and when I mention Choice, the first thing people say to me, oh, you helped me through college, you helped me through school, you helped me through, and it's amazing. It reminds me of, you know, things like Radio Caroline and Radio Luxembourg that helped me through my younger days. So I'm glad I've been able to do that. But I think that radio in general, there's so much to listen to. There's so many different ways of listening.
Where's the spirit of Choice now, do you think? Some of that kind of pioneering notion from that era has gone away a bit and become a bit corporate?
Yeah, I think it has. I think it has. You know, at the end of the day, it's all about the ratings. It's all about the ratings. It's about the listeners. Even with the advent of digital radio and the pirate stations going on digital, I don't even really enjoy listening to the pirates as such. And to be honest, I wake up to Radio 4.
Ah.
and then I, depending on the kind of mood I'm in, I'm not sure I should be saying this, but I do listen to Nick Ferrari.
Well, why not?
Because sometimes I want to throttle him.
Right, but I'm sure Nick Ferrari and then James O'Brien.
No. By then I'm, you know,
you're
started.
At work, then,
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, and you know, when I'm looking for music, I still go back to stations like Solar. Because Solar is probably the closest. And then, you know, a bit of magic, depending on who's on in the afternoon. You know, because those are still stations. I mean, it's great also to be able to switch from time to time, not that often, but to hear what else is going on, what's up and coming.
So. Have you got the podcast habit yet?
I haven't, but I will after today, I promise.
I think you should.
I will.
I think it's one of the reasons why people like Ben Hammersley invented the word, said at a conference recently, radio is dead, sorry, and then put up another caption that said, but this is the golden age of audio. So there's some really interesting stuff being made that's not gone anywhere near a transmitter.
It's amazing. I have listened to business podcast, but not, you know, your listen back type things.
How much time are you going to be able to give the Radio Academy?
Well, currently it seems like quite a lot. I think until I get up to speed, you know, I'm happy to invest the time that needs to go into it.
But as you were saying, unfortunately, we're not going to see much of you in the Radio Week. Are you even able to come to the Radio Festival?
I won't, because believe it or not, on the very same day, actually, no, it's the next day, I am hosting a huge awards dinner for women in business. I just couldn't believe how badly timed my first, but I will be at the Arias, and here on in we will make sure we check our dates and not have this clash again.
Excellent. Well, the whole radio industry wishes you well. It's a breath of fresh air, Yvonne.
Thank you.
To have you in the chair.
Thank you.
And, you know, I hope we hear from you regularly on this podcast.
I hope you invite me back. I'd be happy to come along. Thanks a lot.
Okay, back to you, Stu.
Thank you, Trevor. And there's more from Mr. Dan coming next with a discussion recorded live on stage this week at the Nations and Regions Conference in Salford.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today programme.
Welcome to a live recording of the weekly podcast from Radio Today. We're on stage at the annual Salford Nations and Regions Conference, and we've called this session Radio Tomorrow. See what we did there. We have half an hour to shine a light on three new opportunities for radio. We'll hear about a potential new source of public money for audio producers in the UK, and we'll find out how a similar scheme is already working successfully in the Republic of Ireland. On the day that Manchester is still reeling from the news about Key 103 rebranding and going national, we'll focus on the opportunities for small-scale DAB stations, and we'll discuss the future that's already here. Voice-activated radio. How are Alexa and her friends going to change the way we listen and the programmes we make? I have a distinguished panel with me who are going to introduce themselves.
I'm Will Jackson, Managing Director of the Radio Independence Group, the trade body for audio production companies.
I'm Philip Cooper. I work for the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland and I would be one of the managers on the Sound and Vision funding scheme.
I'm Gregory Watson. I'm the Managing Director of MuxCo, which is a network of local multiplexes across England and Wales.
I'm Sarah Challis. I'm the Creative Director for User Experience and Design for the Voice and Conversations team at the BBC.
That is a typical BBC job title, isn't it? So, what does it actually mean? As far as I understand it, it means that you're helping to develop these new voice-activated skills that we're all beginning to use.
That's absolutely right. So my team are the designers who focus on the user interactions with these new platforms. And we are absolutely, fundamentally about to change the way we engage with content. I think they are unlocking a whole planet of potential. If we think back to huge cultural shifts that we've been through, from when we started writing things down through to the printing press, through to radio, importantly, onto telly and then onto the internet. Each of those shifts was allowing us to distribute information more accurately to larger groups of people. Awesome. It was all fundamentally in one direction though, so it's broadcast. Even the internet is primarily broadcast. We publish content and we allow people to engage with it, but it happens asynchronously. And so what we're seeing is that we're getting better and better and better at pushing content out to the great public. We're not necessarily getting better at understanding that content or engaging with the ideas within. We are seeing people's communication skills dipping. We are seeing people being overwhelmed with technology, with information that they don't know how to navigate. And this new change, so voice and conversational assistance, we think about it being more having a conversation with an idea, being able to move a single thought backwards and forwards to clarify it, to help people to really understand the heart of the issues that they're concerned about. It's a seismic shift. It's fundamentally offering as a way to help people clarify their thinking, dial up their critical thinking skills, build on human empathy and communication skills. It's a really exciting opportunity, and that is kind of what my team is grappling with at the moment.
Because we're used to radio listening over the last sort of 100 years, it's been quite a passive thing, hasn't it? We've switched it on and we listen to what's on, that's the phrase, what's on the telly, what's on the radio. And now it's much more about what's in, it's about, hey Alexa, give me this, much more like with Spotify, it's I want to listen to whatever and you just get the record you want, you don't have to wait for the tune that is going to come up on the radio. So I guess there's a big challenge here in terms of how we use those machines to access the content that's being created by producers.
Absolutely, and this is a big thing that we've been looking at the BBC. There's a really interesting piece of work the R&D team is looking at around object-based media, around how do content makers create a piece of content and attach the right descriptions, the right metadata, and allow it to go out into the world so it will find the right user. I think there's a really interesting point around, at the moment, voice devices and smart speakers are really, really, really immature. The platform is really immature. It's rapidly developing, and we should see exponential growth over the next few years. But the platform and the cleverness to surface the content in a way that's meaningful and a way that reduces friction and the way that would enable content makers, like the gang who was just here before, fantastic, amazing, the diversity of age and location. We want those people to be able to make content and for it to be described effectively and make it to the right end user. I think it can be a potentially scary thought. It's decentralizing the distribution mechanics, but I think the potential is limitless and really exciting.
In your world, what Bauer have just done is very clever, because they've rebranded Key 103, which has no meaning at all, as Hits Radio, which is exactly what it says on the tin. And that's the world that you live in, isn't it? Where we say, hey Alexa, give me Hits Radio.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an anachronism, and a number is sort of meaningless, isn't it, in the world we're operating in. It's about I saw a little hand action. I've been talking for a while. What do you think, Greg?
No, I mean it's all exciting. It is, you know. I remember 15 years ago in commercial radio, the threat of the iPod when it arrived, and all the program controllers like, oh my God, that's the end. You know, people just want to listen to music, and actually we got it wrong. Actually, what people loved was what was going between the songs. Mm-hmm. No, it's more. The interesting thing is more of going through Alexa and all those devices is actually what's the future for broadcast. Because actually, if everything is coming, you know, through a smart speaker device, and you can get whatever you want down to a much finer level of or granularity, actually, is there a future for broadcasting in the long term?
I think yes. This is my hunch. This is not my expert view from the BBC. I think people still need the expert curation, giving somebody endless opportunities to say, we've all been stuck, haven't we? What do you type into an empty Google search? What do you do when you're listlessly scrolling through Netflix? That point where you have access to everything and you need to make a decision, that's one of the moments we're really struggling with as humans. And that's where we look to experts who tastemakers, people who know the right lock up of content to make something interesting and challenging. And I think we will always, always absolutely need that expertise from broadcast. And I think it will just come in a slightly different way. It'll be about how that content's described to make it surface in a stream that is more suitable to a person, rather than it being a traditional linear broadcast.
Greg, your business, well, you run several businesses, but Muxco owns some multiplexes.
Yeah.
And you're a big fan of small-scale DAB. What kind of opportunities is that going to bring?
Well, I think, and it's interesting sort of linking it into what you're just sort of saying, because actually I think, you know, the two do combine together. And before I get onto your answer, sorry, Pacific answer, I mean, I was just thinking back about, you know, some of my former colleagues who now live in Australia but have grown up in the UK, and they want to know what Birmingham Football Club are doing. You know, so actually for them, what you're talking about, which is can provide very local content, but to people in other parts of the world who are associated with it, which obviously small-scale DAB can't do. So it's actually, I think it's that interesting thing of localised content or on specific topics, and actually how do we get that across. In terms of small-scale DAB, I think, you know, as we just sort of mentioned about Bauer with Hits, you know, becoming, you know, dare I say, a homogenised service across the country, which is great, and that ticks certain boxes. But actually what probably people in Manchester are probably concerned about is, well, where is my Manchesterness? Am I losing that? And maybe to a degree they will, but that's then creating opportunities for new operators and more locally focused operators to broadcast, whether that's on the Manchester local multiplex or through the small scale multiplexes which Ofcom and DCMS are talking about. But I think the other side that, and certainly one of the things that we're sort of talking and trying to lead the discussion is actually how big should those small scale multiplexes be? Because some people, there's one in London, it covers 3-4 million people. Is that small scale? And using the example here, would Manchester prefer to have another Manchester-wide multiplex and then, say, a Salford small-scale multiplex to really cover what's happening in the city of Salford, rather than a one Salford service being on a much bigger multiplex? And I think so there's these issues which, as an industry, we need to talk about. Well, actually, what is small scale and how small should small scale be and what that content is focused on?
You're still confident, aren't you, that there is a future in DAB? Because there are plenty of commentators who say that DAB has been overtaken and that we've actually gone straight from old-fashioned FM to Alexa.
No, if DAB has a future. It is not dead. It doesn't need to be, as Bob Shedden would probably say, reinvented. I would, though, put my hand up and say, in 2030, is FM, AM, DAB the right platforms? I'm not putting my hand on my heart and say, of course it will be. Because I think technology is moving at such a rapid pace. You know, nobody thought about smart speakers probably 5 years ago, and here we are, and they're going to be outselling in terms of units more DAB than DAB radios this year. So DAB has a future. How long that future will be, but I think we've still got to be thinking, as we just said, there is still needs to be a broadcast platform to get to people in cars as they're out and about, which Wi-Fi, internet might just not work.
Let's talk now about how programmes get made. I mean, the financial side of this business is curious, isn't it? Because you're out there in the galaxy of modernity with your fat R&D budgets. Meanwhile, radio stations are closing. Over in the Republic of Ireland, they have this fantastic scheme called Sound and Vision, mm-hmm. where radio stations can work with independent producers to create programming, and it gets publicly funded. Phil, tell us how it works.
Yeah, so basically it's an application process. We have two or three funding rounds every year. We give out in around 11 million, in 11 million euros, that is, in funds every year. Now, that's distributed between television and radio. On the radio side, it's probably a bit over a million, maybe a million and a half that would go to radio projects. Since the start of the scheme in 2005, we've given out almost 22 million has been allocated to radio programming. All programming has to have something to do with Irish culture, heritage and experience. So it's programming that is focusing on very much Irish audiences. The programmes as well for radio, they need to be supported by an eligible broadcaster, and that's essentially RTE, which is the public service broadcaster in Ireland, or one of the licensed radio stations in Ireland, and there's over 50 of them between community and commercial stations. In terms of the kinds of programmes, though, that we fund, I got some stats together before I came over, and it's like it actually works out at over 2,000 documentaries have been funded, 300 drama projects, 150 entertainment projects, and then 125 education programmes. And the way that the money is being distributed, over 8 million has been gone directly to the broadcasters, and the largest share of that 8 million would have gone to community radio stations to produce content. And then approximately 12 million thereabouts has gone to independent production companies or individuals making radio programmes, and the majority of that would be getting broadcast on commercial stations, and then to a lesser extent on the public service broadcaster RTE. So that's essentially it. Like, I suppose in terms of the scheme and what it delivers, like it, there's a lot of content that would not exist if it wasn't there. And that's really good for Irish audiences.
And so it's good for the programme makers because they get to make shows that otherwise wouldn't be funded. And it's great for the radio stations because they get to broadcast
they obviously get a benefit out of it as well, you know.
Wouldn't it be marvellous, man from the Radio Independence Group, Will Jackson, if we had a similar system over here?
Well, funny you should mention that, Trevor.
The government, when it was working on the BBC Charter Review, as you do, found £60 million down the back of a sofa that hadn't been used for digital television switchover, and raised the idea of a similar contestable public service broadcasting fund. RIG and Radio Centre and other members of the radio companies lobbied strongly for radio to be included in that, as well as the government's key category of children's TV, which they were looking to support. The government agreed with us, but there were certain practicalities around including radio in the main fund, so they're now exploring whether there could be a separate contestable fund for radio. RIG and Radio Centre again are having constructive conversations with DCMS about that. We'd like to see it happen. We'd like to see a good sum of money allocated to that. And it would be, again, for independent production companies and radio stations to work together and use that fund to create, again, public service content away from the BBC.
Well, that's the point I was just going to come on to, which is it would open up a market for radio ideas, which right now doesn't exist because you only have the BBC to pitch to.
Absolutely. It's worth saying that from our soundings of the sector, audio producers are increasingly making content for places like Audible and Spotify. So the market is growing, but we'd like to see more public service content on things like commercial radio.
Now, while I've got these eminent minds with me, I want to do a little bit of speculation about where we're going. We call the session Radio Tomorrow. We were talking last night about the game changer that is the smart speaker, and it's totally changed the way that I consume the radio. And I wonder what else we can see coming and what sort of effects new technological advancements are going to have on the way, first of all, we listen, and also what kind of programmes we can make. Sarah, what have you noticed people are now doing with their radios that they weren't doing before?
That's a really interesting point, because at the moment we are mainly seeing people, we're seeing DAB behaviour, we're seeing them swap their digital radios. So the traffic, the spikes, it's when you're getting your breakfast ready in the morning, it's when you're cooking dinner in the evening, we're seeing really familiar patterns. And I think that we have a real opportunity to take the audience with us, to help them to figure out what are the new, wonderful ways they can engage with this content. So I think there's a real kind of education piece. It's a completely new way of engaging. We have been conditioned over the last sort of 30 or so years to think more like computers, to type a sentence into a box and to look at a bunch of options. We've become visually mediated, and I think the opportunity for voice is that we can start to approach the way we engage with information in slightly different ways. I think this might be drifting slightly off topic, but one of the things we were talking about was the idea of a recipe for the main life of a recipe as a format has been an oral tradition. It has been something that has happened in a kitchen, has been handed down from mother to daughter or, you know, through the family. And then in the last couple of hundred years, we started to write them down, and that was fine. And then in the last, 30 to 50 years, we've started adding pictures. And we now validate whether a piece of cooking is right by how it looks. And of all the qualifiers of success, that is the least useful one. And we know from food photography that the thing that they photograph is never the thing you eat. And so we have an opportunity to start thinking about how we let people measure success, how we describe to them the nutritional value, the flavours, the smell, how it makes your soul feel. All of the things that food does in a wonderful way that is not necessarily the visual. And so I think that basically is we've trained ourselves to work more like computers, and we now have an opportunity to train the computers to operate more like us, and I think that's a fundamental shift.
I'm excited by that world, Willie.
Very much so. I mean, the interesting thing, the interesting experience I had was I went to the student radio conference, which almost by definition is largely constituted 18, 22-year-olds, people that are excited about audio. And one thing I like to do, mostly for my own listening benefit is say, what are you listening to? What are you excited about at the moment? And the interesting thing this time was, it was the first time I've asked this, and nobody said a traditional linear radio program.
The recommend what Megan, the student, was saying just now. Absolutely. About people listening to podcasts.
And that was it. So the recommendations were Atletico Mints, a podcast with Bob Mortimer and Andy Dawson. Pappy's Flatshare Slamdown, again, a comedy podcast. One person mentioned a streaming radio station, Central Pacific Time Radio. And there are a couple of hands up for Spotify's Rap Caviar playlist. That's what they're listening to. They're as excited about audio and they're passionate about creating great content. It's just not the linear radio stations that we've grown up with.
Is that the Irish experience as well?
And I know in Ireland, I suppose, listenership is really high. And I'm not sure that that's actually the usual right across Europe. I think Ireland actually sticks out in that way. So linear broadcasting is still very, very popular. There's quite a number of stations that operate both on the community side and the commercial side. It's a tough business, there's no doubt, in terms of actually, you know, the commercial side of stuff is, like, there's advertising revenues and everything that comes into play. It's not easy to make ends meet, and same on the community side. They have their challenges as well. But having said that, I suppose from my point of view in the programme production side of things and seeing the applications that come in, like, there hasn't been a let-up in terms of people coming in with new ideas all of the time. Like, every funding round, we're looking at about 250 thereabouts applications come into us, the majority of which are on radio. And these can be quite small, discrete programmes to quite large ones. So, like, I suppose in Ireland, there's definitely, there's life there. There's no doubt in it. I suppose looking ahead in terms of the content and even the content that's produced through the funding scheme, it's the life that it might have after the fact. And that's, you know, where does it sit after that, whether it's on the broadcaster's website, is there somewhere else that somebody can access it? Something that we actually fund as well is, say, if you want to make a podcast version of the programme, that's something that can be funded through us as well, so it can allow people to, you know, access that content.
It is one of the other great changes, isn't it, in recent years, that we used to think of that, well, there was linear radio and then there was an archive that was owned by the radio stations, yeah, and we could never get at it.
Yeah.
And now the BBC and others are beginning to make that more available.
Yeah.
The podcasts and radio shows, they're there forever. They are the long tail.
And interestingly enough, we're about to publish a policy on radio archiving as well. And it's to do with the commercial and community side of culturally relevant programming. But that's archived for future generations, essentially. So there's a policy being published, and then we're going to actually try and implement that policy and have what we're hoping to have anyway at the moment is a centralised archive, and then hopefully down the line public access can be something that can be agreed from that. So that's
Greg, have a glimpse into the future.
Well, I think the thing which is going through my mind is, you know, making radio is expensive, and the big problems that we have is, for smaller operators, making 24 hours of radio, even if you're operating in just Salford, is quite complicated. You know, therefore, the podcast, we've only got to make an hour or something, or, you know, much shorter, is a lot easier. And one of the other hats, as you're aware, you know, we have is Upload Radio, where we've tried to develop software in a radio station that's currently broadcasting in Liverpool, where people can just create an hour show and upload it, and it gets broadcast on a radio station. And having things like that, I think we, as an industry, we need to be thinking about, you know, how do we make it easy for people to also create the content and then broadcast it without having to worry about the other 23 hours of the day?
Gregory Watson ending that discussion. You also heard Phil Cooper, Sarah Challis and Will Jackson. Time for this now.
At james.crid.land, on the Radio Today podcast and on your favourite podcast app, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, will podcasting eat radio?
Well, good afternoon and good day to the hundreds of you around the world who have tuned in to today's broadcast of the Podcast Consumer 2018.
Last week saw Edison Research release its latest podcast consumer data. It's a good piece of research that is the most quoted data about podcasting. And with over 10 years of data, it's also a good tool to help watch trends. As part of the data release, Edison Research published an updated share of ear study, which showed the amount of audio that Americans put in their ears. Radio is 58% of all audio, that's AM, FM and Sirius. Podcasting is just 4% of the total. So it's tempting to assume from this 4% figure that podcasting is tiny. The research excitedly claims that podcasts' share of ear has doubled in 4 years, but the cynic might dismiss this by saying that twice nothing is still nothing. In most cases, however, radio listening is a habitual and automatic thing. Start up your car, and you start up your radio too. The radio alarm clock wakes you up with the radio. It's altogether too much hassle to spend time producing playlists for the office or shop, so radio typically wins there too. Podcasts are different. They're deliberately chosen and requested, and given that they're speech rather than music, they typically have the full attention of the listener. They're mostly enjoyed on headphones rather than speakers. It's a very different listening behaviour overall. But the share of ear study is more revealing when it comes to podcast listeners.
That number includes, obviously, all the people who don't listen to podcasts, so that's going to average that number down. But if we just look at podcast listeners in share of ear, then we see a very different story. In fact, podcasts are the number one source of audio for podcast listeners. Now, that may sound like it's a foregone conclusion, but it's not, and it hasn't always been the case. AM FM radio used to be the top source of audio for podcast listeners, but over the years, this has crept up with podcast consumers. Now, if you are a podcast consumer, you spend 33% of your audio time listening to podcasts. AM FM radio is in second at 25%, and then there's kind of a virtual tie here between streaming audio and owned music.
So this does appear to show that podcasts have a negative effect on broadcast radio listening. As we discover more podcasts we like, it appears to take a hit on radio consumption. Now, some radio groups have a strategy here, sell ads on both. And that's certainly the case in Australia, where Nova have partnered with Acast and Southern Cross Stereo represent Podcast One properties. Last week, the US's Wondery partnered with Global's DAX to sell ads on Wondery podcasts in the UK. And some radio groups also have a content strategy as well. Australia's Hamish and Andy finished broadcasting their afternoon drive show on Southern Cross Stereo stations last year, but continue to be available as a podcast through Podcast One. Shorter pieces of content from broadcasters like news bulletins are available on most smart speakers. The UK's Global is producing best-of podcasts for example, listeners of The Chris Moyles Show on Radio X. Australia's Nova Entertainment are encouraging and monetising new podcast-only shows. However, I can't escape the feeling that many radio companies are yet to take advantage of podcasting. There are radio studios to hire out, content makers to nurture, commissions to earn on ads and sponsors. Reformatting broadcast audio for podcast use is also an opportunity, easier if it's pre-produced, of course, but producing good local, non-broadcast content that might attract a different audience might also work well. There are real opportunities in podcasting, both in additional revenue and marketing, but also in future-proofing the radio business as a whole. So I'd be keen to learn which radio businesses have properly grasped podcasting, and to understand why many haven't yet taken the plunge. You can find my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening.
As we prepare for the royal wedding this year, let's remember that this week last year, royalty jocked the charts.
Now, this is the official chart with Greg James
and the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. Go.
It's Friday, the 21st of April. It's 4 p.m. and this is a very special official chart.
Between now and 5:45 p.m, we'll bring you all the big stories, new entries, high climbers, and of course, the top 10 in full.
It's a huge battle again for number one this week, so let's see who the contenders are.
Last week, Harry Styles went straight to number one with his debut single.
Okay, so let's begin the official chart, and I feel that there's one more line for you there, William.
There is. We'll be back with Greg to reveal the number one just before 5:45 this afternoon. But to begin at number 40, this is Ed Sheeran with New Man on the official chart on Radio 1.
40.
You can't help liking them, can you? Kate and William making history on the Radio 1 chart this week in 2017. The voices of royalty are often heard on radio these days, but this week in 1924, we heard the very first on air as a speech from the King was aired on radio. He was opening the British Empire exhibition at Wembley. I think he was using the mic built into my old cassette recorder. King George V and the very first royal voice on air. Johnny Walker went to the palace in 2006 to receive his MBE, but it's 49 years this week since he made his debut on legitimate radio.
Song of 1965 there, re-released and happening again. It has to be my main number one man, Johnny Walker and the All-Stars there with a song called Roadrunner. And that went out to you, Patricia. Thanks very much for your very nice letter. Had quite a few letters, actually. Everybody's been so very kind. Nobody could really start on the radio, a new radio station, with more encouragement, really, honestly. And I'll try and thank everybody as we go through the show, OK? 16 minutes now after two.
I think my first show was Cup Final Day. Virtually nobody was listening. Everybody was watching the Cup Final. And then it kind of grew, and I did the Watch News thing, and eventually they gave me a one-hour show Monday to Friday between Tony Blackburn and Jimmy Young, 9 till 10 in the morning, I guess to try me out on daytime. So they seem to be quite keen and kind of pushing me forward. It's a very different thing, though. I mean, from the freedom of Caroline, no producer, no bosses. Well, they were in London. If you did something wrong, it took them a while to sort of, what could they do about it? You're out on the ship. But here you had six floors of BBC managers and execs, and they all could listen in their offices to the output.
Harlem Shuffle, another re-release sound, that time coming from Bob and Earl. Welcome back to the second half hour of the Johnny Walker Show. Thank you very much indeed, Brian Hudson, for the news. Stand by now for a really gas new record from Raymond Froggatt. Here it is.
There's a gas new programme from Johnny Walker as he joins the BBC following Radio Caroline's demise a year earlier. 450-314. Jingles have been part of radio since the 1950s. America was their traditional home, but Britain forged a growing reputation, not least in the 80s when Alpha Sound produced jingles for just about everybody.
You got a friend at the weekend, Seven Sound, the winning place to be. Seven Sound,
the company's musical brains belonged to Alan Fawkes, who died this week 8 years ago. Steve England.
I was doing a few little bits of commercial jingles, and I was got to know some of the local musicians. But, you know, if I played them the American jingles, none of them were jumping up and down and saying how wonderful that is. Until one guy walked in who was called Alan Fawkes, already a good existing jingle producer who did commercial jingles. I played him this American stuff. He said, oh, that's interesting. Have you heard of the Hi-Lows? No, I hadn't. He said, oh, well, that's really good, great harmony stuff, that. That's really good. And the big band sound is, you know, fantastic. Anyway, we got on very well. He invited me to his house. He then said, I'm going to change my garage, my single car garage, into a studio. So I said, well, if you're going to do that, I'll leave Piccadilly Radio, and why don't we set up this jingle company we've been talking about?
Piccadilly, your music and your friend.
The work of Alan Fawkes, the Alpha from Alpha Sound, who died this week in 2010. It's increasingly challenging establishing the provenance of radio stations these days, but the roots of today's capital in South Wales date back to the 80s and a struggling station called Gwent Broadcasting. GB Radio closed this week in 85.
Good friend every day.
Good friend every day it is indeed. All the staff gathered together, a bit emotional. I think we've got to say goodbye.
Do you reckon? Shall I go first? Last one in, last one out, I suppose, or first one out. Matthew Rosser, this is me. Thanks to all the people who've helped me out, and bye-bye.
And from me, Ian Davis, I was the first voice on GB Radio. Very sad, as all the rest of the presenters here at GB Radio are, to be saying goodbye, unfortunately, but it's something we have to do.
Well, nice to have another GB midday at 11 o'clock, but unfortunately not to be. So thanks very much indeed for all the good wishes, and goodbye.
And Peter Milburn saying, it's been nice knowing you over the past couple of years, and thanks very much this morning for your messages of support, which have been pouring in. Let's hope that we can all meet on the airwaves in Gwent at some time in the future.
And for me, Colin Briggs, ta-ra, leave you with the last record we played, or rather the first record we played on GB Radio. Gosh, even get the last link wrong. From all of us at GB, very goodbye.
The end of GB Radio this week, 33 years ago, after just 2 years on air. Chris Evans has lasted a little bit longer, although like many greats, there have been times when a long career seemed rather unlikely. This week in 95, he got his dream job, Radio 1 Breakfast.
Now, people have been asking me over the last couple of weeks, have I been practicing for this job for the last 2 weeks? Well, I say no. I've been practicing for this job for the last 20 years. That's what I say. Yes, it's my show. I'm here now. It's BBC Radio 1, and we're on the air. You better get used to this lot, unfortunately, because they're going to be here quite a lot. Okay, it's now 7:30 on Monday, the 24th of April, 1995, a day that will go down in history, as the day we are back on that radio map. Marconi's listening in the heavens, and Marconi, I thank you.
Understatement always his middle name. Chris Evans beginning on Radio 1 Breakfast this week in 95. So, with FTP launching in Bristol this week, 28 years ago, later Galaxy.
You're listening to test transmissions from FTP Radio.
The much-loved Dutch pirate radio Veronica launching this week 58 years ago. The final Alan Freeman pick of the pops on Radio 2, 18 years ago.
And don't forget to join Dale Winton for the normal pick of the pops tomorrow at 2 o'clock on Radio 2. Ta-ra.
Spirit FM launching in southwest Sussex 22 years ago.
From today, we're going to be entertaining and informing you.
Steve Wright ending a short stint on Radio 1 Breakfast 23 years ago. Steve Wright in the
morning. Oh, he's come rushing back now. Look out.
And the death of sports broadcaster Colin Bloomfield at Radio Derby 3 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments! Thank you, David Lloyd, a double contributor this week. And also thanks to James Cridland, Roy Martin, Yvonne Thompson and Trevor Dan and guests at the Nations and Regions Conference. Next week, the return of Stu versus Roy, as we're joined by the cult radio duo... I said cult. Larry and Paul, they'll be with us next week. Thank you for listening.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.